The first, in terms of the introduction, the first topic we're going to discuss is rate-regulated activities. We hope to publish the standard very soon. And we have Umair here and Mariella to present, to give a short presentation, and we can have a discussion of what they're going to say. Umair, can I ask you to start?
Yes. Thank you, Hans. I hope everyone can hear me.
Oh, yes. And can I ask everybody, when you're not talking, to be on mute? That includes myself.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon to all of you, according to wherever you are based. First of all, thank you for all the help you have given us so far on this project. As you know, the board plans to publish an ED in January. We are asking you today for advice on outreach for the ED. Before starting, we will present a high-level summary of the main features of the ED. In the interest of time, we will not go through all the slides. If you would like us to clarify any detail in the slides, we would be more than happy to schedule a meeting to go through them offline. First up, slide 5 summarizes the problem. In summary, rate regulation specifies how much compensation an entity is entitled to charge customers for goods or services supplied in a period. The ED calls that total allowed compensation. Rate regulation also specifies when the entity can include that compensation in the regulated rates. In most cases, that compensation is included in rates in the same period in which goods or services are supplied, but sometimes some of that compensation is included in rates in a different period. When these differences in timing arise, the amount of revenue recognized in one period by applying IFRS 15 includes compensation for goods or services that were supplied in a different period. It could be a past or future period, or does not include all of the total allowed compensation for goods or services the entity supplied in the period. This is because part of it was already included in revenue in the past or will be included in revenue in the future. Slide 6 includes a numerical example that illustrates the problem that we just explained. Moving to slide 7. Slide 7 outlines proposals to solve the problem. The proposals in the ED would require entities to provide information that enables users to understand the effects of the differences in timing by recognizing regulatory assets, regulatory liabilities, regulatory income, and regulatory expense. Slide 8 applies the proposals to the example discussed in slide 6. This slide also illustrates the proposals in the ED, with regulatory income minus regulatory expense presented in a line item immediately below revenue. That line item would be broken down in the notes as illustrated in the next slide, which is slide 9. In slide 9, the balance of CU20 shown in the earlier slide is made up of regulatory income to reflect addition of regulatory assets in 20X1, CU20 in this example, and regulatory expense to reflect recovery of regulatory assets in 20X2 of CU20 in this example. If there were any additions or fulfillment of regulatory liabilities, they would be disclosed in a similar manner. The regulatory income minus regulatory expense line item also includes other components such as regulatory interest income or regulatory interest expense and changes in estimates. Moving now to slide 10, we know that you need to understand the scope of the proposals in the ED so that you can identify the population of entities that may be affected by the proposals. And this can obviously affect your plans for outreach. The ED deals only with accounting for regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities. Rather than repeat the formal definitions of these items, I will list 3 conditions that follow from the definitions and must be present for regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities to exist. First, an entity needs to be a party to an enforceable regulatory agreement. And regulatory agreement is the term that the ED uses to refer to a set of enforceable rights and obligations created by, for example, a contractual licensing agreement or a service concession arrangement. The ED does not specify any particular legal form for a regulatory agreement. Second, the regulatory agreement needs to determine the regulated rate for goods or services. And third, the regulatory agreement needs to determine the regulated rate in such a way that in some cases, the compensation for goods or services supplied in one period is charged to customers through the regulated rate in a different period. And this should now sound familiar. This means that the way in which the rate is set creates differences in timing. This feature in the regulatory agreement will be key to identify rate-regulated entities that could be affected by the ED. The board will publish illustrative examples with the ED. These include a good overview of the most common circumstances when regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities would arise. The examples can help you understand which companies may be affected. Slide 11 highlights that the ED deals with a very specific subset of rate regulation. Regulation that sets the regulated rate in a way that causes differences in timing to arise. In contrast, other types of rate regulation do not cause differences in timing. For example, regulation that just establishes a cap price but does not lead to adjustments to future rates as a result of goods or services already supplied or because of amounts already included in the rates. As a final reflection, we highlight in slide 12 that the ED will not impact all entities with regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities to the same extent. This will depend on factors such as whether entities are currently recognizing regulatory balances and how closely aligned the regulatory requirements are with the proposed accounting requirements. This consideration may influence stakeholders' views on the proposals, so understanding the impact of the proposals on stakeholders may help you plan your outreach and help you put their views into context and ultimately understand them better. Moving now to the questions for ASAF members, which we have on slide 3. We will ask each question individually. So I will hand over now to Hans, and we can start with our first question, which is what sort of outreach activities the board should undertake? Thank you.
Okay. I open the floor, so please use the chat room to indicate that you want to speak. Okay, Linda.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Thank you very much. So I know that you're asking the questions individually, but there's a lot of overlap between what we would recommend you do and what we're planning on doing. So in fact, I'm answering all the questions at the same time. Before I actually go into it, though, I'd like to remind everybody that in Canada, you know that dual registrants are allowed to use either IFRSs issued by the ISB or US GAAP, and we do have entities that are either following US GAAP and always have, or because of the state of play where they didn't want to take the risk of two changes, our securities regulators stepped in and have given exemptive relief to some who are not dual listed to also use US GAAP. So they wanted a stability platform. So we do have quite a number of entities who are currently using US GAAP. And so one of our big activities will be to educate people on the effect of these changes compared to what they're currently doing under US GAAP. And that'll be a big factor in our jurisdiction. That said, we're already getting ready for our outreach on this important proposal. We're very supportive. And so we're setting up some targeted stakeholder meetings, which could be done, which will be done virtually, obviously, so it's quite easy to add people to these meetings. We have analysts that cover our rate-regulated entities, both from the debt and equity side. And we also have preparer association groups. For example, the electricity groups get together. We have gas associations. So we will target preparers to get many preparers that way. We also are setting up meetings with our rate regulators and our securities regulators. And then we'll do some of those targeted, and then we're going to try to get a mixture with virtual roundtables. So we have people from different sides of the proposal, including auditors, including in those meetings. And so we intend to be quite active in our outreach by sending up these types of events and doing them all virtually. And so we are opening up the floor for others to attend these events if they would like to join us. So those are the things that we're planning on doing, Hans.
Okay, thank you very much. I do not see anybody else raising their hand virtually. Oh, yes. Jim.
Yeah, maybe just, to follow up. Am I getting an echo?
That's fine.
Okay. Maybe just to follow up on Linda's points. Certainly, I think in the U.S., this provides a much a clearer pathway to get to accounting outcomes that are more globally converge, but there will be some differences. So we are happy to help in any way that we can. If there are questions about application of US GAAP and how this may converge or maybe slightly different, so we're happy to help in any way that we can. I think the interest in that alignment is probably sharper in Canada than it is here, but certainly companies here are also very interested. So if there's any way in which we can facilitate that outreach with multinational preparers in the U.S. that have an interest, please, we would be more than willing to do that either by participating, Linda, with you in some of your outreach, or participating directly, Hans, with the ISB, if your team would like us to facilitate meetings in the U.S. And again, I suspect the interest is maybe more acute other places, but there is an interest here as well.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful, Jim. You addressed basically question two. So, you know, the three questions are very interrelated. So I suppose, you know, you can address them all at the same time. Vincent?
I'd also mention that IFRAG has commenced an exercise of seeking constituents' feedback, which will be an input to our early stage analysis. So we've also had a similar intent, and we're reaching out to both preparers and end users. So we've issued two questionnaires targeted at those two audiences. And those questionnaires are open until the 8th of January. There's also, the question around the scope and the difficulties that stakeholders would have in terms of being able to participate in the outreach. And that was feedback we also got in our meeting last week with our CFSS members, where there's really some uncertainty around the scope of the model, and that would be a factor around the ability to participate in the outreach. So to enable them to participate in our outreach, we've shared a slide deck which does summarize the key elements of the model based on the discussions that have been in the public domain. Just a few words on the questionnaire. So the user questionnaire, and I guess this is something you could consider in terms of the first question. So there we are looking at building on the insights which we gleaned from the outreach activities that IFRA conducted at the time of the discussion paper. But at this point in time, we are getting a sense of what users' analyses of rate-regulated entities are under the current reporting regimes and what the anticipation would be of the high-level impacts of the proposals. And then for the preparers, the questionnaire really centered around the implications of the scope of the model. So for example, whether they have activities that they expect to fall in but does not, and conversely. And also we have some questions about the likely effects. So on one of your slides, you've noted the entities, the companies that do not currently have regulatory balances. So we expect there to be an impact, but we're trying to get a sense of the level of impact. And the last aspect would be on the implementation challenges and cost benefit too. So this is what we are attempting to get before the exposure draft comes out, and we'll see how to collaborate with the ISB and feedback that into the due process.
Okay, thank you, Vincent. Raymond.
Thank you. Hans.
Thank you, Hans.
Various of the constituent bodies of PAFA have met already and have started constituting subcommittees to look into this. And there'll certainly be a lot of interest from this part of the world. I think we've got a lot of companies that are affected by it and will be very keen to understand how their accounting is going to be affected going forward. A lot of them are in the state-owned entities type space, but I apply IFRS all the same. So we are finding that there is a lot of interest in the topic, and hopefully going into next year, once the exposure draft is issued, we'll start to get some feedback, which we can then feedback into the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Raymond. Patrick.
Thank you, Hans.
Thank you, Hans.
Is there you go? Oh, that's okay. Thank you. So, first of all, we have a working group at the ANC level that is working on rate-regulated activities and the exposure draft. So that's progressing. We would welcome an exchange of views with the staff, because we did that for goodwill and impairment, and that proved extremely useful to clarify some points and better contribute. So I'm sure that's easy to organize. As regard the outreach activities, maybe a few points. The first one is that there is maybe a need to clarify during outreach activities, how the model supplements the requirements under IFRS 15, because we still lack to a certain extent how disruptive that would be as compared to IFRS 15 and assess the cost for preparers and also the matching between regulatory arrangements and how to translate regulatory arrangements into something that is compatible with IFRS 15. In France, most people consider that we are into service concessions arrangements, and therefore we apply IFRIC 12, and so we fully need to understand the interaction between the standard and the IFRIC 12, the potential standard and IFRIC 12. Most importantly, there are possible doubts on the scope of that is underlying in the exposure draft. And we are asking ourselves, in particular when we have a look at slides 10 and 11, if the scope is not wider than we in our community expected. The key point is to understand what an enforceable regulatory agreement is very precisely, and therefore to identify the stakeholders. We have an initial interpretation that is somehow restrictive and that would restrict the upcoming clarifications to a limited number of stakeholders, but should it not be the case, that would be a significant change. So outreach activities have to clarify how far that goes. So the scope is a key topic to be clarified via the outreach meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Then I give the floor to Mark.
Thank you. Hear me. It's helpful actually to follow on from Patrick, because the issue that I really wanted to pick up on is that from a UK perspective, there are comparatively few companies that will be affected by the exposure draft, but in certain sectors it will have a very significant impact, and therefore our proposals around outreach would very much be targeted outreach, which is focused very much on companies that will be significantly affected. Certainly we would be happy to work with the board We know that joint events have worked very positively and got high quality feedback previously. But as I share Patrick's nervousness that the scoping of the ED will be particularly important. And I have concerns that it's going to be really important that it's targeted to ensure that it focuses only on those entities for whom this treatment is appropriate. So we're giving further thought to that, but that would be sort of my main concern in thinking about the proposals. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Sue.
Thanks, Hans. To double check with Vincent that I understand how the sort of process is working from the EFRAG side. So you've gone out with the questionnaires before we've gone out with the exposure draft, so without the the words that will actually be proposed for comment. Is the idea there to get some initial feedback to shape the subsequent consultation that you will do once the actual words in the document are published? Is that the idea? Just interested in the sort of timing of that document.
Indeed. So this is very much a first step, getting a sense of what the anticipated impacts would be based on what's understood from the board discussions. But once it's clearer, we'll have a more meaningful engagement on the implications. So this is just very much the first step of our outreach. And whenever we issue our draft comment letter, we do further outreach as well based on the actual details.
Okay, thank you.
Nobu.
Yes, thank you. We think it's very important to ask the right set of companies for the outreach for this exposure draft. And in that sense, we have very similar concerns that Patrick and Mark had, which is about the scope of the proposal. And based on the tentative decisions that the board that the ISB has made so far, some of our constituents are having trouble whether they would be subject to this standard or not. And clarification on this point is very helpful. And from a standard setter's perspective, if you don't get the scope right, we think there's a risk that the ISB would need to re-expose its proposal again. And so it's very important that you have the scope right. And maybe it would be helpful to ask companies who would not be subject to the standard, but may, if you have a different scope or definition of those companies that would be subject to the standard. Thank you.
Thank you, Nobu. Yu Chen?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Hans. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. We have some general comments on the questions in the slides, based on some feedback from the Chinese stakeholders. The first one, they suggest that the board obtain a wide understanding of current practices, main problems, and impact on the financial statement of the rate-regulated companies in different jurisdictions. Second, they suggest the outreach activity should include maybe survey questionnaire, some virtual roundtable discussions, and so on. Third, they suggest the participation of the outreach activity should include different stakeholders with different background. For example, the standard setters, relevant regulators, financial statement preparers, auditors, and analysts. That's the third point. And the last one, they also suggest maybe the board can provide some multilingual version of some materials or guidelines or cases to raise people's awareness of the exposure draft. That's the some suggestions from the stakeholders in China. And finally, personally, I have the similar feelings with others that the scope in this project is very important. Yeah, that's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Yu. Tommaso.
Thank you for your answer. I agree with comments before made by Patrick, Nobu, and Mark, that the scope issue probably is very important on this project. I think that also the recognition criteria could be another point to be considered. But trying to be a bit more specific, the one point that I think we need to better understand how it implies the application of the standard to companies is whether the enforceability of rights and obligation schemes where there is an authority, how they work. Maybe investigating outreach. So we're happy to support the ISB. Because I see you blocked. Another point on the time, because I see the consultation period is 150 days. Time, I see that there is business combination and common control. EP, which is in consultation. I wonder whether we have enough time to organize outreach events in this period, in this year, where I think it will be very critical for preparers to close the books. Don't know if we can imagine a consultation period which ends a bit later, allowing us to have an important consultation with our stakeholders. We find this project very important, so maybe a bit more period, a bit more time would be needed.
Maybe Hans is frozen. Takeshi, would you like to come in?
Mute. Thank you, Sue. We, AOSSG, have asked our members for comments on each question. In order to avoid the duplication, I'd like to convey the comments we received, except those that have already been presented here so far. Regarding question one, according to the comment, since the proposals are rather limited in scope, small group discussions with affected stakeholders would likely be the most effective. However, the ISB can hold short webcasts on the proposal so that other stakeholders are able to educate themselves on the proposal in a simple way. Regarding question two, the respondent could identify entities in its jurisdictions that may be affected by the ED and invite them to the ISB's outreach. Regarding question three, according to the comments, summary information prepared by the ISB, particularly visual representations such as diagrams and flowcharts, will be helpful in supporting effective education of stakeholders and creating awareness of the proposals. It will be beneficial for the ISB members and its project team to participate in a domestically organized outreach. I hope that our comments will help the ISB conduct this project. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, did somebody else want to speak? I can't see any in the chat box.
So
no?
I may be the last person to speak.
Okay, I didn't see you name down. You didn't put it in the chat. Yes. If you could use the chat box just in the future, then I won't miss you.
Okay, okay. Well, first of all, there will be only a few number of companies or preparers who will be subject to this new standard if it comes out. And we haven't counted, but there are only a limited number of primarily utility companies and public goods and services company. But I wonder whether they all have this type of regulatory, contract or something. So probably only a few companies will be subject to this, standard. And I think the interesting point of this new proposed standard is that they include a new concept and new definitions, such as regulatory assets, regulatory liabilities. At the same time, that target of this standard is very limited, very specific. So I have actually two suggestions. One is that the omnibus should be designed to convince and educate the potential users so that they can understand the concept and the usefulness, logics behind. And the second suggestion is that the omnibus should include interactive exercise, such as like a in-depth interview with the preparers. By doing this type of interview, we will be able to figure out whether there is any practical challenges, including, as everybody indicated, the scoping issues. And I believe there will be very different type of contracts in the marketplace. So if it is possible, ICE will be able to identify different type of contracts and give, as an example, this is the type of contract which will be subject to this new standard. This is not part of this group. So I think that is a kind of outcome from this outreach. And one more thing is that, as somebody said, the period for unleash is at this moment 150 days, but this may be relatively short because as we approach the end of the year, probably preparers, companies, they will be very busy with the end of the year reporting, closing. So the voices from the preparers, companies in Korea, they say, can we have more days for the feedback? That's it.
Okay. Can you hear me now? I was frozen.
Yes.
Well, okay.
Yes.
All right, great. So I think people have all contributed, what they wanted to contribute. We are a bit early. Shall we move on? We need a little bit of time for people to replace others. Is EFREC able to present in like 5 minutes? Vincent?
Yes. Okay. I'll ask my colleague to join me.
Okay, let's start at 11:40.
Hans,
yes?
Can I just ask a question? That's
yes.
Right.
Yes, go ahead, Susan. I'm frozen.
Sorry, I was just going to ask the staff. So a few people have made prompting you to help people.
I think like it's a question for staff, but I guess like I was not able to hear the full question from Sue.
Sorry, I think Sue's going to. Hans, can I?
Yes, go ahead, Sue.
A few people have indicated that they're already getting comments from stakeholders about lack of clarity on scope. Do we have anything we could say to help people with their understanding of scope?
So as I mentioned in the TF as well, like we are aware that the scope is a contentious point for a number of stakeholders. And what we have done is we have developed illustrative examples So they include quite a different number of scenarios which highlight the circumstances or situations in which regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities can arise. But in addition to that, we will look to develop some materials that would be helpful for stakeholders. One thing which I can, at this point of time, just quickly clarify about the scope. So the scope is targeted towards regulatory agreements. So it is not that a company would be in scope. It is the proposals are primarily focused on the key characteristics of the regulatory agreement, which a company needs to be a party of. Only those type of agreements can create regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities. And when I say agreements, it does not necessarily mean that it's a formal written contract or a tangible contract between two parties. It can be enshrined in the legislation. It can be by statute. It can be by law. It can be through court rulings, for example. So it does not necessarily need to be a tangible or a physical sort of a document called a regulatory agreement. All it needs is those three characteristics, which we highlighted on slide 10, slide 11. But as I said, so we will be looking forward to working with the different national standard setters to educate people on scope.
Yeah. I would like to add something to Umer. So I would like to emphasize what Umer said, that having an understanding of the population of regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities and the circumstances that give place to those items to arise is a good starting point for you to have a better understanding of the standard and assess the scope of which entities might be affected by the EV. So thank you very much, Umer, for pointing this out. This is very important. Also, I have noted, of course, that the scope is a concern for mostly Europe and also Asia. However, I also noted that Linda did not include this as a concern, so I wanted to catch up with her or maybe follow up on her. So why is that in Canada? This might not necessarily be an area for concern, and maybe if you share something, maybe the other members of the ASAF can benefit from that.
So if I can you hear me, Mariella?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so I think it's not as big an issue because this project, as everybody knows, has been a key project for Canada from almost the very beginning. We actually deferred rate-regulated entities adopting IFRS for a period of time until we could get some understanding of where IFRS was heading with regard to this project. And so we've been doing education around scoping during the whole development of this project. I think initially it was a similar issue for us here in Canada, but we have done a great deal of education. We will likely in our outreach also continue to do education in regard to this. I just think that we got started maybe a little bit earlier and the industry was so eager to interact with us that we didn't have trouble having the right conversations with them. I think it's a matter of timing and attention, but we're happy to participate. We'll be very happy to see the educational materials because we'll build them into our outreach just to make sure that everybody is on the same page. But I think it's just a matter of the key focus this was for our jurisdiction from the time we started thinking about going to IFRS all the way till now.
Patrick, you would like to add something?
No, I just wanted to thank you, Hans. I just wanted to ask if there was any idea of how much it would represent in terms of assets and liabilities that would be modified under, I know it's difficult, but the scope has to be related also to the magnitude of the amounts that we are talking about. So has the staff a view and or does the staff intend to carry some sort of field testing to assess this point?
At this point, the evidence or the information we have is that the effects of the proposals will vary very much among entities that will be affected. And this is because some entities have already, in some instances, done some cleanups to to their numbers, in the sense that when IFRS 14 came up, we have learned of a case of an entity, for example, that then they realized that they could be impacted by differences that they had not expected by since that moment. So what they did is they started, for example, aligning the recovery periods of the assets with their useful lives. So they've done a lot of work to understand where the differences arose when IFRS 14 came up, and they have done some work during the last years. As a result of this, then, even though they currently do not recognize regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities, the items that they would be accounting for right now would be not necessarily very significant in terms of the impact in their balance sheet. So it will pretty much depend in which state the entities are. Are they recognizing currently regulatory balances? Are they not? How different are the regulatory requirements to the accounting requirements? And as a result of this, then the effect will vary.
Tommaso, you wanted to get back in?
Yeah, just sorry for the appetite for this item. When it was mentioned as slide 10-11, again, I had this question in mind. My question is whether my point here is where what is the meaning of enforceable rights and obligations, and I don't want to come into this debate about this, but. The question for the staff is whether there were enough consideration in preparing the ED or the examples of a case which I think is common, where the enforceable rights and obligations are stated in the regulation in the agreement, but they need to be approved by a local authority. So, if you have considered this situation, or this is something that is not specified in the standing AD or in the example or something that we consider in the outreaches.
We know enforceability will be a matter of judgment. It's not the first standard, or it's not the first proposal that the work comes out where stakeholders will need to assess enforceability. So, for example, this is also a concept in IFRS 15. So, in any contracts that we are dealing with, the accounting for contracts, we need to have enforceable rights and obligations. And something, this is not necessarily something new that this standard is putting through. Enforceability is not necessarily given by an approval note by the regulator. In some cases, the items are already contemplated in the regulatory agreements as allowable expenses. However, the entity at the reporting, they might not necessarily have a signed approval document from the regulator, but it will then need to assess and apply judgment to understand whether that that regulatory asset exists. But it will be doing so reflecting on its experience and other entities in its jurisdiction and industry with the regulator. So the standard will include a list of items that will provide entities some sort of evidence for them to assess then whether those items exist. But as I said, so enforceability is not necessarily something new that this standard is bringing up.
Okay, thank you, Mariella. So in the meantime, we have used up all the time that was allotted to this topic. Shall we then revert back to the original calendar and start again at 12 o'clock? I see nodding. Okay, so we start again at 12 o'clock.
Okay.